The next paper is from the Toronto Center, Mr. Ostrander, Color Estimates of Mars.
Early in 1967, as part of the National Observing Program, as planetary recorder, we adopted a program that we felt we could eliminate some of the ambiguity in describing the color of Mars, and also to make a permanent reference record whereby if any color changes do occur on Mars visually for the amateur, we would have a record for the maria areas and the oranges, the grays. It's this type of ambiguity that I'm having a difficult time explaining color right now. They've always been described as ochreish, orange, pinkish, yellow, reds, and colors probably more apt to describe ladies' makeup rather than a planetary body like the planet Mars. So just prior to the 1967 opposition, we sent out some 77 colors as selected from the DuPont colorizer system, which did consist of 1,322 tints and hues. Quite a large selection. And 35 covered the dark areas. And I'm sorry I don't have the slides on these. Due to a misfortune at home, I did lose most of my, we had a fire. And I did lose a great deal of my material. But I think I have just enough to get the idea of this paper across with me today. These 35 chips were representative, a wide representation. We didn't want to introduce bias on our part to the observer, and we wanted to give the observer as much latitude as possible in picking and choosing what he himself felt would be the most suitable hint for the dark areas in general and also for any specific color areas within the dark regions of Mars. And we had a larger selection for the desert areas, 42 shades running from quite a very strong yellow to a washed out pink. And with many hues of red included. These chips were sent to all of the centers in that have participated in the National Observing Program, as well as some individual members at large. And I must say the results were most gratifying. I have a few slides to indicate how the observer was asked to report his observations on. And if I could have the house lights, please, out. In this first slide here, this is a typical example of two reports very close to opposition. In April, the planet Mars was relatively sparse. We had very few observations in Mars, in March, I should say, undoubtedly due to the cold weather locally. And also Mars itself appeared relatively featureless, as can be seen in these early drawings, very close to opposition. As we got over into May, another observer reported a much more contrasty effect. And as you see here, the observers had allocated the number as designated by the DuPont colorizer system. They would compare the color chip to the area on Mars, pick the most appropriate color, and then just record the number for that area as observed in the telescope. Is there a time lag on this? Well, forward. That's the last, here we are here. No, I'm looking for June. I'm up to July here. Ah, fine. I understand, fine, thank you. By June, various markings on the planet started to become a little more readily resolved
although the diameter of the planet was shrinking from its maximum of 15 seconds of arc, we were starting to get a slight gibbous phase apparent here, and acidelium, very prominent northern feature, started to become quite easily recognized. Even much more prominent here in a matter of just 1 week. So that it has been felt that it was a local, by local I mean Mars, it was a local Mars, possibly a dust storm or just relatively poor seeing conditions on the planet at its closest approach to Earth at that time. Yes, I am. It's a matter of lag, I guess. Oh, I see. Here in July, as you can see here, the details started to become very contrasty against the desert areas of the planet. And again, the planet was shrinking in relative size. And this was the first result. Amazingly, most of those numbers that you saw located on the desert areas of the disk all proved themselves to be very yellow. The results from the various centers reported across Canada were quite gratifying in their relative agreement. Reds were noticeably non-existent. It had been felt that the well-known red planet of Mars was truly one of yellow, and the dark areas, well, we showed a gray-blue, as statistically agreed upon by most of the amateurs throughout the country. There was some very faint hint of pinkness over in the Amazonia area of Mars, and there were many, many hues of grays and blues in the dark areas on the planet. Due to the extreme northern tilt, we had a well-defined north polar cap, north being to the bottom here in this slide, but unfortunately we will have to wait for the next two or three apparitions to see more of the southern area of Mars. This was left on the map as just featureless because it just couldn't be seen due to the viewing angle from Earth that, in the direction of the north polar cap of Mars. We then compiled all of these observations that I've just shown you a very small sample of, and transferred the colors as supplied by the DuPont people, chemically quite accurately duplicated as to their color chips, and we produced a globe, which might give you a better impression as to what it did look like, idealized, of course, over the 4 months. If I could have the film, please. And how do we turn this off? Oh, could we have the slide projector turned off, please? We have divided the film up into the four respective months of good observing, April, May, June, and July, and we've just inserted white tape to separate them. Unfortunately, I had no time to put proper subtitles in, but I can describe verbally what you're looking at. This is much the appearance of Mars in April. Here we seeing the area around 90 degrees, the Amazonia area. There's a hint of Syrtis Major coming in, and the North Polar area is rather well developed, broad, but the details were rather indistinct. Acidelium was probably the most prominent feature on the planet. And but then as April went away, things became much better developed on the planet in May. Here you can compare acidelium again as a much, much clearly defined, although there are some breaks in the continental mass, as I call it. Margaritifer up here was very well demarked. And out here in the Solus Lacus was very poorly seen in May. And this was the area where some observers felt that it looked slightly pinker than yellow, right in this region here, relatively small region. There were many more color differences on the dark areas than there were on the desert regions. If you'll notice, the polar cap has started to shrink slightly in May, and then as it progressed through to June, the planet had become considerably smaller, more gibbous. The contrast effects were excellent for those that observed at that time of year. Acidalium was showing an appendage running out into the desert regions here. Solus lacus is more clearly defined. The polar cap has shrunk even more so, but definition became quite good as the planet went from 15.2 seconds of arc down to some 12 seconds of arc. Here's Syrtis Major, very well defined in May, and there was appendages and small island-type areas beginning to show themselves. And then by July, when the planet was becoming quite small, unfortunately, this happened to be the time when the observing was the best. At least the local conditions on Mars had cleared up. And Cimmerium, Sirenum up at the top to the south here, well-defined. The polar cap had become a nice, small, white, bright button. Syrtis Major was extremely well-defined and contrasty. Sinus Medii here, sharply defined. Margaritifer as well. And of course, Acidalium, very well pronounced and displayed. It is hoped that this is an initial attempt at making color observations on a non-objective basis. And it is hoped that we can add to this from apparition to apparition, and perhaps by 1972, have the full globe of Mars from north and south poles completely mapped and in color. Thank you very much.
Do you have any questions on this interesting paper? Mr. Park?
What conditions did you view the color checks? How did you illuminate the color checks?
We have never found that a bright light disturbed an observer in evaluating Mars. Mars itself is so extremely bright that the problem is generally the opposite, permitting the eye to adapt to this tremendously bright object, so that we have always used anywhere from a 60 to 100 watt bulb on an extension right out beside the telescope. As a matter of fact, some 8 or 9 years ago, I found that by exposing my eye to a light bulb, I could cut my resolution time on Mars down by some 20 minutes. It usually takes me a half an hour to start to see detail on the planet. And I could cut this down to 10 minutes by permitting the iris to diaphragm down and permit this the light of Mars to start showing itself. So that a 100-watt light bulb was just put by the eyepiece.
Hello, LeClaire.
I'm very sorry, I didn't...
Will there be any effect on the appreciation of the color with the size of the instrument used for the magnification?
No, not generally. There was a tremendous difference in color between reflectors and refractors. We did find that the refractor owners submitted the detail, the mapping of Mars, but unfortunately their color evaluations were at such odds with the color-corrected reflector owners that we depended on refractors for mapping and reflectors for color evaluation. Refractor owners were reporting the polar cap areas as being a very prominent orangish-yellow according to the color chips, which more or less negated the validity of refractor observation. These small aperture telescopes were not able to provide color changes in small areas on the planet. It did require the owners of larger instruments to give us this information.
Yes.
Source that you use to
I'm sorry.
How about the color temperature of the light source that you use to illuminate your color chip? Would not this make some difference?
No, it wasn't. We discussed this with a gentleman at Kodak,
and he more or less became my advisory on this matter, and within the ability, within the range of the eye itself, comparing the image in the telescope and the color chip under the light of a 100-watt frosted light bulb, it wouldn't make any difference at all. Where we did have a real problem in duplicating the film was in working with color-corrected light for illuminating the globe and the map. Kodak was of considerable help to us in this, but...
It strikes me that if you're going to use a long green light bulb, then this is much redder than white light. Therefore, this would partially explain why your color chips chosen were more yellow than you expected.
Would they not show more red?
No, because if you're using red light, then they will appear yellow. They will appear more red.
Of course.
The temperature of your incandescent light bulb is lower than that of
Yes, we had many other small problems facing us on it. Mars was relatively low in the sky. There was the reddening effect of its relative altitude through the atmosphere. There are many other things that could affect the true color evaluation. This is primarily an amateur paper designed for a reference system for amateur work. White light, something like fluorescence, is this what you're suggesting?
I'm not trying to make a suggestion. So would you run to standard or to your color?
Well, our standard was 100-watt frosted as availability. It's if you start creating too many problems for the amateurs throughout Canada, you'd get no cooperation at all on such a program, and it had to be as simplified as much as possible.
One more question, and then we must go on to the next paper.
Mr. Rutter, I think the gentleman perhaps will look at the fact that you're not only illuminating color chips with tungsten, but you're also reproducing color on your map when it comes to illumination, and you're showing the film on your tungsten illumination as well. So it seems to me that tungsten would cancel out. It's true that if you used a fluorescent bulb, you would get a different color, but by the same token, you use fluorescent
bulb.
I think we must go on to the next paper. Thank you, Dr. Ashton.